Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the Bucher and Friends podcast. Here is your host.
Let's send it over to Rick Bucher.
Rick Bucher.
Welcome to a very special episode of Bucher and Friends, part of the United WeCast Network. This podcast was recorded live at RPM on the Water in Chicago on All-Star Thursday with Chicago Bulls star Zach LaVine, courtesy of Kemper Lesnick. Enjoy.
All right, so our next guest is a prolific writer, reporter, and journalist. He's appeared on ESPN. He's a senior writer for Bleacher Report and their NBA coverage. He's a regular on the Mad Dog Show on Sirius XM. Please welcome Rick Bucher and Bucher and Friends.
Thanks, Tom. Thank you all for joining us. Thank you to Kemper Lesnick for putting on a great event. Obviously, this is All-Star Weekend and has been mentioned in the... Thank you. Probably should use the microphone. You can tell I'm a professional, right? With All-Star Weekend, obviously there's going to be a lot done around Kobe Bryant and in memory of him and having just lost him. And I wanted to do, if you would, I'd like you to join with me and just take a minute, just take a second, close your eyes and think of someone that you love and that is not here right now with you, and give them that virtual hug. So let's just take a second and all do that together, if you will, in the memory and the honor of Kobe. Thank you. All right. I am so pleased to introduce, you know him, two-time dunk champion, soon-to-be three-point champion, we're assuming. The face of the Chicago Bulls, Zach LaVine.
Thank you.
All right, so speaking of Kobe, he obviously had a big impact on you, meant a lot to you. You've had a unique experience that no one else in the room can speak about, which is being on the floor and competing with him. Mm-hmm. What was that like?
Man, so... You know, Kobe meant so much to all of us. He was, I'm 24, so he was like our, you know, generation's Michael Jordan. That was my idol growing up. I have a couple of stories, but I mean, the main one I remember is, so it's like my 10th game my rookie year. I'm not even starting yet. I'm at Staples Center. I'm playing him, and I'm having like a really good game. Like I have like 28 points going into the fourth quarter. It's like the first big game of my rookie year, and I come out into the fourth quarter and Kobe's guarding me. You know, and I didn't touch the ball. He's denying me. He's playing me hard. And there's an out of bounds play and it was just like a breakage in time. And I'm at the free throw line. He comes up and he hits me on the butt. Says, "Keep going, young fella." And it was just like a surreal moment to me because, you know, you're competing and you're not really into, you know, oh, this is Kobe's my idol. But it made me just take a step back and I was like, wow, like this is like surreal to me. So, you know, he meant so much to the game, and you know he's going to truly be missed.
Yeah, what is it that you will take from your experience with him, or when you think about him, what will you take going forward?
I mean, the main thing with me is what I took from him is his work ethic and his mentality. You know, everybody talks about, you know, all the shots and the dunks, and you know how obviously how good he is. And you want to take his parts of his game, but you know, thing that that's helped me, you know, get to this point even growing up is just learning about his hard work and his, you know, his mental approach. You know, I you know, pat myself on the back. I always try to be the hardest worker, you know, wherever I go, you know, on the team and the NBA. I want to outwork everybody in the summer. So, you know, that's something that's going to stick with me forever.
Your father, Paul Levine, professional football player, played a little bit in the NFL, played in the USFL. How much did having a dad who had been a professional athlete before you shape or influence the way you've approached your career?
Man, you know, that's like my best friend. And it's he pretty much just paved the way for me. It was, you know, not a lot of kids, you know, you're lucky to, you know, have that type of influence in your life. And not everybody has that, you know, so, you know, I'm appreciative of it. But, you know, for somebody that's played the sport, and he pretty much, you know, guided me to do all the things that he did wrong. You know, he grew up in a single family home, and he's, you know, he put me on the path. I was doing interviews in the car when I was in third grade, you know, coming home from like basketball games, he'd pretend to put a mic in my face, you know, so. He and at the time I didn't understand, you know, and I was in third grade. I was before I do in-house games. I was going to shoot 100 shots before the game. You know, afterwards I had a routine. I had to write down a book, you know, all the shots I took. So, you know, he was preparing me for this time and I didn't even know it. You know, it's,
well,
yeah, I got to thank him, you know, for everything.
So did he make it overt that he saw you as a future professional athlete, or was it just he was preparing you based on his experience as a professional athlete? I mean, how much was that this sense that this is what you were supposed to grow up to be?
It was always, he said it was always a plan for me to, you know, he wanted me to be a professional athlete. He said it was going to be for me to put the hard work in and to make it happen, but he was going to put the steps in there for me to do it. And I think he also was cleaning up for the things that he didn't do as a professional athlete, you know. You know, like you said, he played 2 years in the USFL. You know, for people who don't know, I didn't even know in the '80s it was like another, you know, NFL. It was another NFL league. He folded on, and then he played for the Seahawks. I grew up in Seattle. He played for the Seahawks for a couple of years. He went to the Green Bay Packers. He broke his foot, and then that ended that. So, you know, he said I was a, you know, a great athlete. He was 6'4", about 250. He ran a 4.4. Played outside linebacker. But he said, I didn't watch film. He said, I used to chase girls. I went to the club, things like that. He said, you know, and that's why I didn't have somebody to tell me the right things to do. You know, he made sure I didn't, you know, do those things.
When did you know that you were bouncier than the average person?
Bouncier. Wow. What's crazy is I was always been a really good athlete. But when I was younger, I was really small. That's why I played point guard, you know, pretty much growing up. And I was like, I wasn't even 6 foot going into high school. I grew to 6'3" my senior year, my 6'4". But when I finally grew to about 6'4", I started dunking a lot in games. The first time I dunked, I was 5'8". So that's, you know, that's when I realized I could jump pretty high. But I dunked when I was 5'8", but 5'8", 5'9". But then when I grew to about 6'3", 6'4", that's when I realized, you know, it was a little bit different.
Okay, so paint the picture for us. You're 5'8". Where did this dunk occur, and who did it occur on?
It was in like a jamboree game. I was playing the summer ball with the high school team. So it was like a little open gym. Not open gym, it was a game, but got a steal. I went up for a layup with my left hand. I just was high enough and threw it in the hoop. I was surprised. I didn't dunk again for another year, actually. I didn't dunk again until I was in ninth grade because I really didn't know what I did. It was just, you know, a spur of the moment type thing. And, you know, I remember my dad, I was looking at my dad in the crowd and he was just like perplexed. So it was kind of cool.
I don't want to belabor this because I feel as if you've made a concerted effort to shape the view of you as being more than just an athlete or a dunker. So, but I think the room can share this with me, like seeing you do some of the things that you physically do, like just that verticality and what it's like to be up there. I mean, have you ever jumped? Have you ever taken off and you're like, I am way up here. Like, look where I am.
Man, no, it's, you know, it's a special skill and not everybody gets to have that, you know, and I can definitely take advantage of it in the game. And, you know, I'm thankful for, obviously I worked on it, you know, in the summer, I do a lot of workouts, You know, when I was younger, I used to do lunges on the field, you know, to the 100-yard line and then backwards, and then to the 80-yard line and backwards. So that definitely, you know, helped. But yeah, there's a couple times, you know, like in the dunk contest, the second time I won, like I never tried that between the legs from the free throw before. That was the first time I did it, first time I made it. So that was pretty much that was one of the times I was like, wow, like this is this is special.
So did you just think of it in the moment? Did you have it in your head? Like how do you come to attempting a dunk in the dunk contest that you've never done before?
I just wanted to end it. You know, we were going at it back and forth. Me and Aaron were going at it back and forth. And, you know, I was like, we both had spectacular dunks, and it was all right. In my head, I was like, it's probably the best dunk contest ever. And I just wanted to do something that's never been done before. And I'm either going to win or I'm going to lose with this, but I'm going to go out swinging.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Switching back a little bit to your dad, you talked a lot about how he prepared you in how to prepare as an athlete. You also seem to be very purposeful when it comes to what you do off the court. How much did you learn from him, whether by trial and error, what he didn't do, what he didn't realize he could do? How much did you learn about the business of being a professional athlete from him?
You know, that's something that comes with experience as well, like learning experiences. You know, going into the NBA at 19, you have to grow up fast. You're in a sport with a bunch of, you know, grown men. They have children, and you know you're looked as an adult, as a teenager. Mm-hmm. So there's not a lot of room for error in that, and you almost have to like fake it until you become that person. Mm-hmm. And you know, growing up, like I said, it was things that, you know, he prepared me for, but I feel like that was something that I went through on my own. And you know, my parents were with me every step of the way, especially when I was in Minnesota and doing those different, you know, those things growing up in the NBA as a teenager. But I feel like those are more learning experiences to where you learn how you have to act on and off the floor.
Hmm. We always talk about the father-son equation. I don't want to lose mom in the mix.
Yeah.
What was her influence?
My mom was pretty much our rock. You know, she worked two jobs for 7 years to be able to, you know, allow me to do these AAU tournaments, you know, wear these shoes and, you know, go to these camps and things like that. You know, without a day off, my dad was the one who was spending a lot of time with me. She took the back seat and pretty much the brunt of it, you know, had to deal with, you know, me and my dad, you know, not deal with me and my dad yelling at each other because it wasn't a lot of me yelling back. But, you know, she had to deal with, you know.
Your hurt feelings from being yelled
at,
right?
You know, I'll go to mom and, you know, she'd have to console me and be like, no, this is what we're doing and things like that. She had to be really tough. And, you know, she was definitely the rock. And, you know, I feel like the person that, you know, I am today is a lot because of her, because she's so kind. And, you know, she taught me, you know, almost how to, you know, become a, you know, a good young man.
Hmm. Were there veteran players when you first came into the league that either helped you or counseled you or that you emulated?
So when I first got to the Timberwolves, it was an extremely vet team. We had, you know, one of my good friends on team now, Thaddeus Young, was in his like seventh or eighth year. Kevin Martin, Mo Williams. But the biggest one was when we traded for Kevin Garnett. You know, he was the best teammate I've ever had, you know. And, you know, I had a story I tell everybody. I remember I was extremely hard worker, so I went to the gym late at like 8:30 or 9 o'clock on one of the off days. First thing, though, I found a little weird. There was like a Rolls Royce Phantom out there, and it was like, I don't know anybody driving that, you know, on the team. So who is this? Curtains are in the back and everything. So it was kind of cool. I looked at the car for like 5 minutes, went up to the practice facility. I see Kevin Garnett in a full sweat doing sprints, you know, up and down the floor. And that was the first time I was like, man, this is a future Hall of Famer at 40. He doesn't have to be doing this. And it was eye opening. He was a big part of my rookie year, you know, teaching me the ropes.
Was he still, I don't want to say crazy.
He's crazy. Yeah, he's good crazy, but he's crazy.
But I mean, wildly intense.
Yeah, yeah.
And he still had that at 40, even with his interaction with you and the team and everybody else.
It was every practice was on 10. You know, it was at the max. And, you know, he elevated everybody. Even when he didn't play, you could hear him, you know, on the sideline calling out defensive coverages on the other side of the court. So, yeah. he was the best teammate I've had.
What do you make of his TV career?
I mean, he's good, man. You know, especially with the little cuss button and everything. I think he's really good. You know, KG is a character.
How do you go about making important decisions? Who do you lean on? What's your process when you've got to make a big decision?
I mean, first off, like I said, I'm a family person. So I talk to my family. I still talk to my dad and take advice from my mom and dad. You know, I talked to my girlfriend. I've had my girlfriend for 8 years. I talked to her about a lot of things. And then I evaluate, you know, what's the pros and cons about it. You know, almost try to figure out, is it benefiting me or am I doing this for a reason? Is it worth my time?
Right. Yeah. So when it comes to, I'm sure you get approached all the time, business relationships, business ventures. What is it that you look for? What appeals to you? What's the thing that piques your interest in, this is something that I'd like to do, or this is something that I think would be valuable for me to participate in?
I think the first thing is you have to look at, like I said, is it worth your time? And is it something that you're doing, be interested in? You know, because if you don't be faking it, or if you're doing it for, you know, a reason that's not, you know, true to you. You know, obviously people will do things for money and, you know, things like that. But if it's not true to you, I feel like people can see through it. So I obviously want to go at it about, you know, is it something I want to do? Obviously, is it worth my time? Is it valuable? And how can it, you know, affect me later on?
Yeah. So making it monetary is not the primary focus for you. Like, what am I going to get out of this financially?
Yeah, no, not because, you know, I'm in a different situation than a lot of people. Obviously, I'm a professional athlete. I don't have to look at it money-based as of right now.
Right.
So, you know, I want to build relationships also.
Are there things in particular that inspire you? Like, when you think about things that you have a passion for, what are those things that you'd like to get into?
I'm simple, you know, I'm still 24. So, it was just going to sound crazy. I'm really big into video games, but video games is taking over like almost all of like media, you know, online and things like that. There's Twitch, Mixer, different things like that. So I'm trying to go into that route because I already do this stuff, you know, a lot because I'm just at the house playing video games in my spare time. You know, see if I can dive into that, you know, genre a little bit more.
Right. In making a decision, I feel as if you have a lot of advisors, that you open yourself up to a lot of input from other people. Mm. How do you determine who you're going to trust? This comes up in my conversations with athletes all the time, because they go from necessarily not a whole lot of business experience, not a whole lot of money, to suddenly
jumping into it, yeah.
Extreme wealth,
yeah.
People extremely interested in partnering with you and figuring out who you can successfully partner with. Like, how do you go about figuring out this is someone that I'm willing to go into business with?
And sometimes you need help with it too. So you have to go seek, you know, some professionals who are good at their job and are meant to do that. So obviously I have a financial team, you know, and I talk to them about a lot of things. But then also, is it like, why is this person talking to me? Is he talking to me because he wants to help me? Or is it, oh, this is Zach LaVine, the basketball player. I can take advantage of him. I see that he's a young kid. He's 19. He doesn't know a lot about this. Let me see if I can talk him into it, you know, so. You know, I'm obviously, you know, I'm happy I can, you know, obviously talk for myself and stand up for myself. But sometimes it's hard to see through that. And
sure.
Learning experience is sometimes the best teacher as well. So, you know, you have to go through those trials and then, you know, hopefully you make those right decisions. But, you know, like I said, experience is always the best teacher. And I always fall back on my dad with, you know, my parents is, you know, is this a good idea? Is this not? I talk to my financial team and sometimes you can try to just read the person and see through for who they are.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices.
Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'll be honest, when I first came to know who Zach LaVine was, and it was obviously largely off of the dunk contests, yeah, off of just your great athleticism, I probably put you in a box like many people do. Oh, that's what he is. Like, yeah, he's a great dunker. He's a great leaper. Yeah. I've had a chance to get to know you, and I know that there's much more to you than that. What do you think is... First of all, are you aware of that? Like that was a perception or perspective on you that you had to change or that you had to confront?
I understood it, but it didn't bug me because I understood where it came from. You know, even at 19, 20, I understood, you know, NBA is driven by social media and it's in the media can portray you in a different way. I played with the Minnesota Timberwolves. We won about 20 games a year for the first 2 years. We weren't on a lot of ESPN games. We weren't getting put out there. We weren't making the playoffs. So the one time that fans get to see you or casual fans get to see you is in the dunk contest. So that's going to be their one picture of you. Hmm. They're not going to see you putting the hard work in, you know, spending 4 hours working on your moves. They're not going to see you, you know, get your 25 points this night on all jump shots. You know, they're not going to see that. They don't want to see a dunk contest. And it's not, that doesn't bug me. You know, we do this for the fans. And, you know, I went out there, I wanted to put a show on, but I didn't let that stop me and, you know, or even try to, you know, make that narrative because I knew who I was. I know the type of work I put in. And, you know, eventually that stuff comes to light.
I found it interesting. I hope the story is true that when you were growing up, that your dad was actually putting you through the 3-point contest
on accident
in your in your backyard,
yeah,
right? That, yeah. I mean, that's where it started. It didn't start with dunking. It started with the event that you're going to be in Saturday night.
Yeah. So I used to, I grew up middle class. We didn't have a whole lot of money. So we used to go to the Goodwills and the thrift stores. And my dad, pretty ingenious about this, we used to buy the big swimming pools, the plastic ones, and buy about 3 of them. I had a backyard with a hoop and we went to all the thrift stores and we grabbed probably all the basketballs we could out of like 5 stores. We spent like all day going to the stores. And he put the balls in the buckets. And, you know, there's probably about 60 and, you know, 20 in each one.
Okay.
And then when he would go to work that day, you know, during the day. So when I would come home from school, he wouldn't be back. So I'd be able, when I go get home, I could go shoot all the balls in the bucket, 20 at a time. So I didn't have to have a rebounder. So I would shoot 20, go to the next one, shoot 20, go to the next one, shoot 20. Put them all back in. I would do that multiple times. So it was almost like a 3-point competition type thing. I would write down how many I made, and I would do that till he got home, and then we would do something else.
What? Describe the back. This is in Renton?
No, this was in Bothell. Yeah, I moved into my grandma's house. My grandma got sick, and we moved in with her.
Okay.
And she had a court in the back.
So describe this court.
It was a... So in Seattle, there's a lot of trees. So obviously, you know, it's green, beautiful place. But my backyard, I had a little bit of cement in the backyard, decent amount of yard. But we nailed a hoop to the it was a tree that sat in front. We didn't even have like a real hoop, but we nailed my dad bought a rim at the Goodwill and nailed it to the tree and made a backboard. And I thought it was the best thing in the world. It had like a chain net, so when you swish it, you hear it. So that's what I shot on.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah. I think everybody can relate to that.
It was fun. Yeah.
That vision.
Yeah.
What is your favorite memory of just those days playing back then?
Just how free it was. And, you know, I remember, you know, coming home from school and you know, I wasn't into parties. I wasn't, you know, I didn't have too many friends. One of my best friends actually lived with me. He had a tough situation with his family, and my family took him in. So he's pretty much like my brother. But, you know, I had like a goal in my head, like every day. Like I wasn't worried about outside things. I would come home and I had a routine and I got my shots up. I would go back to practice. I would work out. But it was something that I wanted to do. It wasn't forced. I just remember how much of an urge I had to, I wanted to just get to my goal. So that was the only thing on my mind.
How much playing in the rain did you do up there?
Man, I used to have so many gloves. Like, I could, it was because it's wet. Seattle, you know, it didn't look like this outside.
So you'd shoot in gloves?
Yeah, just, you know, with gloves, you know, because if it get too wet, you know, obviously yeah. hands freeze yeah. or whatever. But, yeah, it was I was outside a lot. Sometimes when it rains here, I enjoy it. I remember the smell of it. Hmm.
You are in the three-point contest Saturday night. I know there's probably people that were hoping, this being in Chicago, et cetera, that you were going to be in the dunk contest. What made you decide this is what I wanted to do?
I was practicing a little bit for the dunk contest, actually, in the beginning of the season. My initial thought, if I made the All-Star game, I was going to do all the competitions. I was going to do the skills, the dunk contest, three-point contest, All-Star game. I was going to try to put on a crazy show, but, the season went on. Obviously, I didn't make it. And I almost took it as like it's the home run derby. Like, I didn't want to waste all my swings with the back end of the season. I'm still, I'm trying to help us get to the playoffs still. And, I've accomplished everything I have with dunking. There's not a whole lot more I can really do or show. So why not put my hand in something else I haven't done and, try to do something else?
Who do you see as your stiffest competition? Like, who you got your eye on? Like, that's the cat.
The two champions that are – so Dame is out now and Devin Booker's in, and he's won it, and Joe Harris has won it. So those dudes obviously know what they're doing in the competition. They've won it. So those are guys I'm looking out for because, they know their ropes around, the three-point contest.
It's too bad you can't tell them, okay, so we're going to change it up. We're going to get a bunch of balls from Goodwill, and we're going to get –
I would win.
We're going to get the pool.
Automatically.
You'd kill them, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, I've been practicing, though. I'm going to probably go back tonight and get some shots up and work on my timing. I've got the routine down.
So have you talked to anybody? Have you gotten any advice on, like, this is the key to winning this thing?
I talked to J.J. Redick a little bit, a great three-point shooter. And, his biggest problem, he said, was he's an actual jump shooter. So he couldn't change his with the timing because he jumps in all of his shots.
And that takes up time to get up and come down.
He said, just make sure you have a consistent rhythm and make sure he stepped on a line a couple times when he did the three-point contest. So he said, just make sure you're not shooting long two-pointers.
Interesting. All right. You had aspirations. You're obviously having a terrific season. Had aspirations to be an all-star. Also were not invited to the national team camp. Yeah. How are you feeling not – having this kind of a season and not getting that kind of recognition?
It's a little upsetting, but it's nothing that's going to deter me from what, I have going on. I know how basketball is right now. You have to be in almost a winning place. You almost have to be averaging 30 to get in the All-Star game. I'm trying to do everything we can to, get us in the playoffs. I know personally there isn't 12 better players than me having a better season than me in the East, but there's, something else you can do with that. I appreciate you, dog. I just know that. But,
yeah,
with the USA selection, I actually I was a little confused about that. But I think they wanted to go with people who have already been a part of the USA culture. They've left a lot of guys off that, like CJ McCollum and Trae Young and different guys like that. So, obviously I want to be a part of everything. I'm a competitor.
Right.
I want to put my name in it. Obviously I think I stack up pretty well. I play against these guys, all the time. So, you can add a little bit more fuel to the fire, but it's not going to stop me or what I'm going to do. Continue.
Do you, we talked about sort of the impression of you being just a dunker and wanting to shift that narrative. Do you think there are any other preconceived notions about you that you've had to battle that you're trying to change the perspective, not necessarily from a public standpoint, but from within the league or with coaches, other teams?
I think the main thing is I haven't been on a winning team. And, coming from Minnesota is, I was drafted into a rebuilding organization. We started getting better, got traded here. We started rebuilding again. And, I have to prove myself as a winner and try to be at the forefront of that. Continuing now, we're in the playoff push. We still have to be a lot more consistent. I think we're a lot better than what our records, speaks for. We just have to be a lot more consistent going to third quarter, fourth quarters. And, you never know what can happen. We put a string together. We can get into that seventh, eighth spot. But, you know, going forward, I want to, you know, I want to be known as a winner. And, you know, that's pretty much what I do it for.
Six seasons, five coaches. I have that right.
Yeah.
Now, and I'm thinking for all of you out here, imagine wherever you work, you've been working there for 6 years and you've had five different bosses. Like, you'd be thinking, why the hell am I doing this? Like, what's up with this business, right? Yeah. What? And I guess you don't have anything to compare it to, but but give us a sense of what that's like for you at this stage, having that being two different places and having that constant turnover in terms of who's running the show.
It was a little weird because, you know, it's out of your control. You know, starting with, obviously, Flip Saunders is the one that drafted me. You know, rest in peace to him. You know, tragic, you know, incident what happened with him. And Sam Mitchell took over for him. Timberwolves didn't stick with him. Then they got Tibbs. I know you guys know Tibbs, and he was in Minnesota. I got traded here, and it was Fred. They wanted to switch it up, and now it's Jim. So, you know, you have to adjust. It's the professional. You have to still go out there and do your job. Nobody's going to feel sorry for you. You know, I think the main thing is just trying to get that continuity and that connection, you know, because it's a different offense. It's a different defense. It's, you know, it's a different personality each time. So you have to be flexible.
I think that's where players are often done an injustice, in that you have these dramatic changes. And I feel like this might have occurred to you. So Tibbs comes in there, and for whatever reason, you end up not staying there. And so you don't have that Tibbs stamp of approval.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it's suddenly, oh, he doesn't meet Tibbs' expectations. There must be something wrong with him.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And isn't it can be a narrative for so many different things, but, you know, obviously, you know, when I got traded, I had the ACL injury, you know, and they wanted to go a different direction. You know, it's unfortunate, but, you know, me and Tibbs were actually really cool. I actually really respect him as a coach. He gave me a big time opportunity going into my third year. I was averaging the most minutes in the league at the time. You know, I was playing like 38 minutes a game. At one point, me, Andrew, and Carl were all averaging over 21 points a game. So I think if I would have finished out that season, we would have been the first trio of players under 20 or 21 or under to average 20 points a game. We were doing pretty good.
Look at you with the analytics.
I mean, I know my stuff now. So, you
know. You had to take over as the not just the go-to scorer on this team, but a leader as well. And this is a proud franchise trying to get back to the heights. What has been the biggest challenge in embracing that for the first time?
I started a little bit last year. You know, I've always been a leader in my own way, and I think that's the biggest thing. You can't be a leader and try to be like, oh, I'm gonna be like him. You have to be yourself, or people can see through that. It's gonna come out if it's fake. You know, I'm extremely hard worker. I try to let that speak for itself on and off the court. But then when I do say something, I think, you know, it carries weight, you know, because it's not going to be, you know, I'm not a rah-rah guy that's going to just continue to be chirping throughout the locker room saying a bunch of empty things. You know, when I do say something, you know, it's meaningful. So, you know, you have to be yourself, and, you know, you have to, as a leader, you have to look at yourself first. And am I doing everything right? Am I coming to practice? You know, am I doing all the right things, good or bad? I'm going to be the one that, you know, has to take the brunt of this. And you have to be okay with that.
In talking about your background, it's clear how grounded you are and the humble beginnings that you came from and the lessons that you learned. But I get the sense that people look at you as an NBA player. And they look at the contract, or they look at the flash, and they look at all that, and they don't see the person. How do you deal with that? Because I'm sure you run up against it in the way people approach you.
Yeah, I mean, because it's their one time seeing you, and I feel like for people of, you know, that are athletes or at a higher status in sports, you know, it's their one time seeing you, so you're looked at in a different light and not looked at as a person still. You know, at the end of the day, I'm a basketball player, but I'm just like you guys. You know, I can just put the ball in the hoop. You know, I go home, I watch movies, I play video games. You know, I'm a big family person. I love spending time with my family, my dogs. You know, it's, but, you know, it's tough. you know, because they look at you as, you know, almost like how I seen a couple of times as like a zoo animal. You know, you in a cage, they do this, you know, do a dunk or, you know, sign this and do that. But, you know, you're still a person at the end of the day, but you have to understand where you are. And, you know, that one time it might be a little kid. This might be the one time he sees you. And it might be, you know, you might change his life by just signing an autograph because, to him, you're something bigger than just, you know, a regular person.
Who gave you that awareness and who keeps you on track if you lose sight of that? Is that family too, or is there somebody?
I think my mom and my dad instilled that in me as a young age, but I think I started realizing it when I was younger, how I looked at, you know, the Kobe Bryants and the people I looked up to, how I looked at them is how these younger kids are looking at me. And I remember that feeling I had when, you know, I was younger. Actually, I'll tell a story. I modeled when I was younger. I did this little modeling clear when I was younger, and I was like in.
All right, we need some details on this. I want to hear this story. What were you modeling?
I used to do like little things. I was on a Gatorade commercial when I was younger and things like that. You know, poses, different things. But I remember I met some rappers. It was like Juvenile Cash Money. It was back in the 2000s. But, you know, I met them and I just remember I was like, hey, how you doing, Zach Levine? You know, da da da. I have a picture. And they were like, no. And, you know, they had something to do, keep it moving. But it was just like, dang, that was the one time I got to see them. And I remember how that felt when I was a little kid. So, you know, I didn't want to, now that I'm in that position, make them feel that way.
Yeah, that's good stuff. By the way, I was just thinking about the five coaches in 6 years. Reggie Miller didn't have to go through that, but he told me the story about Larry Brown would change their playbook like three or four times during the course of a season. So he would call a play, and Reggie would leave the huddle to go out on the floor, and he'd say, "Okay, wait a minute, is that the old two play, or is that the new two play, or is that the which two play was that?" Yeah. Did you ever run into that with all those different coaches, all those different sets where like there's a play call and you're like, okay, which one is this?
So literally I have that problem every once in a while still. With Tibbs, we drilled defense like night and day when I was in Minnesota. So wake up defense, go to sleep defense, you know, everything. You don't even watch half the offensive film, throw it out the window. We're watching an hour of defensive film. So, you know, the terminology for us was ice was when a pick and roll happens, you send it to the baseline. You don't allow anything to the middle. So when I got here, automatically my mind, all my defensive coverage is ice now. So they were getting mad at me for the first like 3 weeks. I'm automatically, you know, and it's a defensive scheme in the NBA. I'm icing everything, you know, I'm keeping everything on the left side of the floor. So every once in a while, I still have a Tibbs voice in my head, you know, yelling ice, but. You know, I'm a lot better with it now after I've, you know, got away from it.
Biggest misconception about you as a player?
Biggest misconception? I mean, obviously, I think it would have to be just, you know, he's an athlete. I think that's the main thing. You know, you can't go out and I think people get pigeonholed in that. Like you said, there's the Vince Carters and the Dominiques who are, I think, are future Hall of Famers. But you guys, first thing you think of is their highlights and their dunks. But. You know, Vince Carter over, you know, 20,000 points. Dominique over 20,000 points. You can't do that by just dunking a ball. Yeah. You know, these are spectacular basketball players. So, you know, I think the same thing with me. You know, I take pride in my dunking and my athleticism. It's helped me in my game. It's got me to this point. But it's not who I am. And it's not, you know, anything close to the basketball player I am.
I'll give you two that I find myself, because I'm a Zach LaVine advocate now. I don't know if you guys hear me on any of my platforms. No, I wasn't a hater before. I'm an advocate now, and I'm running into some interference. Yeah. Like I'm being Brian Scalabrine will okay. challenge me all the time. He goes, yeah. "Are you somehow related to Zach LaVine?" I'm like, "No, I know what the guy's about
and
now."
I think that's what people have to understand. They have to get to know you.
100%. So, the first one is that you're not all in defensively. And I've said, you know what? You can see that.
Yeah.
Okay.
I see that.
Because I think you've improved.
I'm trying
massively.
My ass off.
Well, yeah. and that to me is the biggest. I mean, people would kill Steve Nash.
Yeah.
And I'd say everybody gets beat one on one.
Yeah.
It's a matter of whether you stay beat.
Yeah.
It's whether you are, and are you trying to change anything about how you're doing it, and are you staying within the game plan?
When I mean, this is the NBA. You're going to get beat defensively. Somebody's going to score on you. The good thing about me, or and I can't say good thing, I've always been such a competitional person. One-on-one has never been the problem with me. I've always been able athletically to stay in front of my man and guard him. I've always been the dude where it's team defense, where it's the dude on the weak side, and I'm locked into my guy, and I don't get to the rotation, or I'm focused on, I'm trying to get this steal. By the way, I am top 10 in steals in the NBA this year, but I'm worried about getting a steal when I should be helping the back door cut type thing. So, right. You know, I can see how you get pigeonholed in that, but I appreciate you looking out for me.
Doing what I can. The other one is, and knowing you and your devotion to getting the Bulls to where everybody wants them to be, is your passion and your competitive fire. I think there's a smoothness to your game, and you're not a KG emoter, shall we say?
Yeah.
That people have that impression like he's a little nonchalant. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I can see that. And that's a good point. Yeah, I never thought of that. Because you can't tell somebody to show emotion when they're not an extremely emotional player. You know, I'll do anything on the court to win, you know, and I lace up my shoes, and like I said, I'm not intimidated by anybody. I'm going out there. I'll play through injuries. You know, I'll pop up and, you know, I'll defend my teammates. I'll do whatever I got to do to win. But you might not get that same type of, you know, KG facial, you know, spit in your face type thing. But, you know, I'm a killer in my same way.
What's the next step for you as a player? What's the next thing that you want to add or improve on?
I mean, each year I go in at the end of the year and I evaluate how I did, you know, the things I did well and the things I didn't do well. You know, I've always said I'm my biggest critic, and then my dad is as well. You know, I've had games. Yeah, my dad still calls me. I'm 24, 25 years old, you know, a solidified player in the NBA. My dad called me and told me what I was doing wrong in the game. So, man, I've had 40 in the game. He told me I should have, you know, you should have did this and this. So, I think the biggest thing now is, you know, I want to get to the playoffs. I want to help a team win. Yeah. And, you know, I'm doing everything in my power to try to do that. And, you know, we still have 27 games left. 27 games left. And just making sure, you know, going into the second half of the season, making sure everybody hasn't gone on vacation early, you know, and, you know, you have to still believe that we have a chance.
So when does dad text, does he call? And do you, like, when you go to the locker room after a game, are you checking the phone to see?
No, he don't call me or nothing during the games. But, you know, afterwards, I might get a FaceTime or something like that. Before, he never used to FaceTime when we started showing him that. But he'll give me a text, and then or I'll get a FaceTime, and you know, I'll see just like a black screen. But he's like, bro, what you doing? Phone in his pocket or something like that.
No. And where's mom in this equation? Like what?
Right next to him, saying hi, honey. Good game. And, you know, I hear her every once in a while in the background, but I call her, you know, just to, you know, she makes my day. She makes me feel better. So I call her just to see how she's doing and checking in. And, you know, she's taking care of the dogs and she's taking care of my dad. So that's a challenging song.
How do you deal with friends, family, people around you that bring a certain negative energy in terms of, hey, dog, you're not getting what you deserve, or like, you should be doing this, or they should be doing this for you? Because I've seen that with plenty of guys, and I don't see that with you. And so I wonder how you, whether it's there and you combat it, or you simply have surrounded yourself with people who don't present that to you.
I mean, everybody in their own camp or their own team is going to have that, because they're going to be, it's always going to be on your side. You're never at fault. You know, as the player, you have to look at yourself and be like, you know, how is this going to help me? Because this is going to affect me negatively on the team, because now I'm going in with the wrong mindset. You know, I think I've always had a small circle. I've had the same 3-4 friends since I was in high school. I've been dating my girlfriend since I was in high school. So it's been the same, you know, group of guys. They all play basketball. You know, my father and the boys I grew up with. But, you know, there's always that negativity and they don't be in your ear every once in a while for things because, you know, they love and care about you and they want the best for you. And, you know, but you as the person, as the, you know, as the player, as the athlete, you have to, you know, almost assess it as, you know, is this true or is this them just trying to be on my side, making sure that, you know, I'm not at fault. And sometimes you are at fault. You have to, you know, be, you know, come to realization of that.
Who can you count on to tell you the truth?
My dad. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Man, okay. My dad, for sure. You know, he told me right from wrong all the time, you know. If I say something wrong in the media, if I approach the situation wrong, you know, I think I'm right. I'm a grown man. I'm 25, and he's still giving me lessons. I appreciate it.
By the way, all those details about being a homebody and all that is going to kill your nickname, Young Hollywood.
That was in high school when I went to UCLA.
that was a cool nickname for a while. But yeah, man, I'm not Young Hollywood anymore.
who gave that to you and how did you earn it?
Kyle Anderson actually gave that to
Is
me.
Is that right?
Yeah, Kyle Anderson gave it to me.
Slow-mo.
It was my gamer tag for my video games for a while too, man. Young Hollywood, yeah. Damn, I haven't heard that in a while.
Do you have any? I haven't heard any others. Are there any other?
I never had a lot of nicknames. I never was I don't think a nickname person.
You know? Yeah.
A lot of my family and my dad called me Z, but that's about it. So
standard.
Yeah, easy.
All right, you've talked about with this Bulls team, and we'll start to wrap this up. In spite of the way things have gone, well, let's just start there. When you look at where you are and where you expect it to be, what do you think has been the number one reason that you guys find yourself where you are right now?
The number one thing where we are right now, I'd have to say, you know, it's close. I would have to say injuries because that definitely hurts us, you know, with Lowry being out, Otto being out, you know, even Chris being out, you know, it's hard. With the NBA now, it's hard to, you know, sustain, you know, consistency with that, you know, with three big pieces out. Wendell's out right now, too. Like, we've hit the injury bug pretty hard for the last couple of years. But even with that, you know, we've been in a lot of games. And our consistency and our, I think, you know, our alertness to, you know, take over a game when, you know, we might go into the third quarter. We might be leading, and this is against teams that, you know, are above 500. This is playoff teams. We've been playing with a lot of teams, and we'll hit a wall, and we're not able to come back. We'll make it a game at the end. We'll try to fight. You know, we might come, you know, be back down by 10, but we don't have enough to finish it out. So I'll definitely say it's a little bit of injuries, but it's a little bit of us as well, not knowing the moment and taking control of the game because. When opportunity knocks, you got to open the door.
We've seen you as the closer, had some situations where you weren't successful, others that you have been. What is it that you've learned about being in those situations from both sides of that? What didn't work and what did work that you may not have known not having been in that situation consistently prior?
Yeah. You know, I've always been somebody I've never been scared to take a big shot, or I haven't been scared to miss either. You're not doing hit all your shots. You're not doing be 1,000%. You know, I think growing up and having that chip on my shoulder and being a confident person, you have to have that in you a little bit. But I think you have to take the good with the bad, you know. Some nights you don't miss, some nights you don't make them. You have to evaluate, did you make the right play, though? And, you know, if it's the right shot, if you just missed the shot, then it's like, hey, you know, I tried. You know, obviously, no one's going out there to, you know, to miss a game winner. So, you know, and then when you do make it, you know, you obviously, you know, you're happy for it, but, it's, you know, it's just another step in the right direction. So you have to take the good with the bad. You know, I'm okay with the scrutiny or, you know, or the praise, you know, I can take that, but I have to evaluate on myself as if I made the right play.
I was just thinking about, we talked about this beforehand, all-star break. is supposed to be a break.
Yeah.
No, you're here doing this, doing a variety of things. Yeah. How do you mentally recharge? And do you feel like you need to find a pocket in this period to recharge for that last push?
Oh yeah, for sure. You know, this is my third All-Star weekend, you know, I've been, you know, a part of. You know, I woke up today at like 9 o'clock. I did the NBA media. I'm here. I got a jam-packed day for today and tomorrow. So, you know, it seems like a break, but it really isn't.
You'd rather be practicing, right?
I didn't say this. You know, it's more of a, you know, you can take some time. You get off, you know, you get off your feet a little bit. Yeah. You know, it's still exhausting, you know, being able to go out there. You have to, you know, do a different events, but, you know, it's fun to be a part of these festivities. You know, you're not, at one point I'm not going to be able to do this. So you have to, you know, you have to look at it that way as well. So I'll find some time to recharge, you know, get a couple massages and be ready to go.
You still believe that this team, the team made it a point that competing for a playoff spot was a goal at the beginning of the year. I get the sense you still see that as a possibility. What has to happen between now and the end of the season, other than win games, obviously? Yeah. What does this team have to do to be able to accomplish that?
I mean, well, there's no more time to waste. It's you know, you have to go in thinking that there is a chance to, you know, I haven't given up. And, you know, I think we're talking about this in, you know, in the room is, you know, I think everybody has to be on the same page. People can't be, you know, pulling in different directions. You know, this is the time where teams can either, you know, go up or go down by, you know, their focus, you know, coming back after All-Star break. And, you know, I know me personally, I'm ready to go. I go into every game thinking we can win. You know, I'm a confident person, but I'm not, you know, I'm not naive as well. I know that the, you know, the time's clicking, you know, on our time to, you know, get to the playoffs, and we have to start, you know, from the jump, and we still have time to do it. So, you know, hopefully when we come back, we can get the, you know, our right mindset and, you know, make a push for this thing.
Big picture, what is it that you want to accomplish as a player? What is the thing that you view as, you know what, this would make my career complete if I can get this done, or this is how I want people to view who Zach LaVine was as an NBA player? And I know that's kind of two questions, but...
No, that's fine. I mean, obviously, I think any basketball player, you know, wants to get to the mountaintop as a team, you know, to win a championship. It's pretty easy and simple. But, you know, as a player, you know, right now where I am, I haven't got to the playoffs. So for me, I want to help this Bulls organization get back to where, you know, we're in contention fighting for a championship. I want to, you know, we've been in the rebuilding process. I want to be, you know, at the forefront of helping us get back there. We've gone through some, you know, some down years now. You know, I don't want to go anywhere. I want to make sure I'm here to, you know, help bring this back to light, you know, because with winning comes, you know, success individually. And that's what I've realized over the last, you know, 4 years of my career is the better you are as a team, the better you're viewed as well. You know, it doesn't matter if you're going out there averaging 30 points a game, you know, you're going to still be viewed as, you know, lesser. So, you know, with winning comes, you know, Everybody eats from it, you know, from the top down. So, you know, I want to be a winning player.
I don't know that that the Bulls could have anybody that I think is better suited for taking them there. And from what I've gotten to know about you, and so very much pulling for you to make that happen, and for the Bulls to make that happen as well. Ladies and gentlemen, Zach LaVine.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.